Shalom, welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where we're also going to share an exciting opportunity, and do please feel free to share this with others who will be interested as well. Today, right now, this evening, Saturday night, the 28th of June, Shabbat just ended in Israel. I'm super grateful to all of the panelists who have joined us and one who I hope still will be able to join for rushing right after Shabbat and having a real important conversation, which is the status of the ceasefire. And just before we started recording, we were having a little bit of back and forth as to whether it will continue, whether it won't continue. Is it something that's actually written in stone or even on paper? And can that be trusted? And many aspects of that. But I want to share, and I'm super grateful, what I referred to people as average Israelis, not average at all. And actually, as I was contemplating about this evening's conversation, I was really excited to realize that, no, I've woven together a beautiful tapestry of so many people who have many things in common in terms of how we share communication about and love for and interaction with Israel and the people of Israel. But this is to give you an opportunity to interact with people from different perspectives and hear, how are we feeling now? What is it, 4 days into this ceasefire, subsequent to the war that we've just experienced that was 12 days with Iran? Let me introduce the panelists, and we'll talk about a lot of different things. And for those who are following live, I do want to invite and encourage you to feel free to pop questions into the Q&A. In alphabetical order, Arnie Drayman is a philanthropic consultant helping people and foundations from around the world to give their charity, donate tzedakah wisely, efficiently, and effectively, and an experienced social media and website guru. Well, Arnie is also the only of the panelists here today who've actually been on Inspiration from Zion before. So Arnie, welcome back. Shanna Fuld is not here yet, but I hope that she will be. She's a broadcast journalist based in Tel Aviv, a community organizer for new immigrants to Tel Aviv, and she's the founder of Israel Daily News, bringing top stories from Israel to the world through a variety of media. Not most significantly, but she brings a very different perspective because her apartment was hit by one of the Iranian missiles, and Shanna is now homeless, and we are looking forward to her perspective as well. Toby Love is a Nigerian Israeli residing here in Israel. She's the CEO and founder of Share Love International, a consultancy company that drives international businesses into Africa through partnerships. She's also a faith diplomacy advocate, IDF, ex-army lieutenant, and author of two books. Toby, welcome. I'm so glad you're here today. Shai Schwald is an Israeli tour guide, also author of two books, and he specializes in the Judeo-Christian roots of faith in the land of Israel. His most recent book, which I'm about a third of the way through, is called A Bridge to Your Roots, an Evangelical Journey Through the Land of Israel, and which illuminates the faith and heritage of the land in Israel shared by Jews and Christians. And I'm looking forward to having another conversation about that. And Julie Stahl is a good friend for a long time, first time here. And during the course of this I hesitate to call it a war, but I suppose it was a war, but maybe a battle with Iran. We were texting back and forth and finding a lot of commonality from being bleary-eyed to being stressed and finding it hard to keep up with our work. Julie's lived here in Israel for 38 years and spent 25 of those years covering the news full-time as a journalist. Today, she's the Middle East correspondent on CBN. Julie, I'm really thrilled. You know, it's funny, we talk informally through so many things, and I'm glad to bring you in and bring your voice from a completely different perspective, because you're usually in front of the camera and not on the other side. So I want to welcome you all, and thanks for making the time today. You know, one thing that I'd like to start off with wasn't even a question that I posed or thought of going into this conversation, but I felt last night as Shabbat was beginning a sense of trepidation. Are we going to be interrupted by for any reason? I'm also getting a note that my internet is a little bit unstable, so I'm making a couple of you co-hosts in the event that I get thrown off for some reason. I'm wondering how any of you, anyone who wants to jump in, were feeling going into Shabbat this week, knowing that the last 2 weeks we had unique protocol here in Israel. Not knowing exactly what it was going to be, but perhaps far from a day of rest. Anyone want to jump in on that?
Wow. I can say that I posted on Facebook after one of those horrible Friday afternoons that for the people that have never been in Israel on Shabbat, being on Shabbat and on the preparation before Shabbat is really a one of a kind experience. And especially for me, as the one who is responsible for making most of the dishes, together with my wife, so the Friday afternoon time is a wonderful, usually very very quiet, very tranquil time, and it was really such a pity, you know, that such a great experience was abruptly interrupted by those missiles. And obviously, you know, this is a very small misfortune, because people lost their lives or their homes, or got wounded or whatever. But based on my personal experience, this was a very sad experience.
Okay, thank you.
But and then this past Shabbat, then yesterday though, I personally wasn't worried. I didn't even think about it. I really think the Iranian thing will hold for at least a few more weeks. But I was worried, and we were joking about the Houthis in Yemen sending missiles. And sure enough, this morning, it's about 7:30, they sent a missile into Israel.
Right.
So
Yeah.
who knows?
Which most of us didn't know about, if we
Right.
were offline, I should say.
Yeah.
Julie?
Yeah, I know yesterday morning when I woke up, I thought, well, this is two started just 2 weeks ago, and now it's like quote unquote finished. This is too much. 'Cause my experience with it starting was I have a mamad in a shelter in my home. And so I was sitting in the shelter that first Friday morning at 3 o'clock when my colleague called and said, please, can we come over? He's got twin 4-year-olds and a 2-year-old and his wife, and then another person who had been babysitting the kids. So they all came over. I don't have a giant house. But then this week, they were all gone, and it was like so quiet in my house. It was kind of
Wow.
eerie. And
Interesting.
yeah. So but I mean, I can say I was exhausted, and all I wanted to do was sleep, which is not me. And I think that was kind of my most of my thoughts for this
Got
week.
it. Toby, you have a couple of little children. You showed me pictures. They're beautiful. How was your experience this Shabbat or in general?
Well, the last 2 weeks, the days sort of merged into one another. the nights merged into one another, and you really didn't know how to differentiate. And so this was the first 2-3 days that you knew that a Thursday is a Thursday and a Friday is a Friday, and you could go to sleep without thinking about those insane alerts that would come before the alerts. So my experience with that is actually positive in the sense that it was a Friday of Nahat, of peace, which we experienced, and we're able to say, okay, today is a feeling of, you know, rest and making up for the last 2 weeks when everything really merged into one another.
I like that. Thank you. Okay. I appreciate all of that. Julie, you just picked up into an area I wanted to go into, talking about 2 weeks and then it's over already. Here's my question. And I think except for maybe one of you, I really don't know your politics, and we can go political. I don't mind, but I don't know the orientation. I don't mean this in a militaristic perspective, but just as Israelis, was our attack sufficient? Should we have had, you know, the topic of this conversation, which I liked being able to use my elderly American background from Wizard of Oz, a good ceasefire or a bad ceasefire, like a good witch or a bad witch. Is it a good thing, or did we need to do more, and do we still need to be worried?
I don't think it's over by a long shot. I think as long as the regime is in power in Iran, okay, even if we finish their nuclear stuff, they're funding the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, everybody else around us, even when they were doing, when Trump was saying he was holding these discussions about, you know, getting rid of their nuclear program, I kept thinking, hang on, what about all their proxies they're funding all over the place? And, you know, I think without, it's possible, I mean, technically, that we stopped at the right time. I think they did do a lot of damage. I'm not particularly scientific, but it seems like they did a lot of damage there, especially once the U.S. got involved. I don't know if they could have, should have, would have kept going, you know, if they could have changed the regime. But it seems that that is going to be the thing that will actually change things in the Middle East.
Okay. Anyone else want to share some input in terms of, should we have stopped? Should we have kept going? Is it a good ceasefire?
I would have liked to have seen a broader ceasefire with Hamas included in it, so that if Iran does have the power over Hamas, even just financially, then let it be part of the deal. Trump loves making a deal. Let's go all the way, make a big deal.
Okay.
The feeling is that a big deal is gonna take place in something like 2 weeks from today. Something is cooking. We don't know everything.
Right. Do you think so? Do you think that there's a big deal coming, or we've now just kicked the can down the road, and like Julie said, it's not over.
I also have the feeling that it's not over. It's not over. And you know, people call it the 12 days war. It sounds, in a way, it reminds us of the 6-day war. I just want to remind everybody that after the great victory of the 6-day war, we had a very lengthy war, the war of attrition.
Excellent point.
So we should, Israel should be very, very careful not to slide into something like this. But what the mechanism that is being spoken over here in Israel is somehow to copy what's going on in Lebanon. In Lebanon, we don't have any written agreement with the Lebanese government, and of course not with Hezbollah, but in practicality, Hezbollah was beaten severely, and they don't try to shoot any missiles or something like this over to Israel. But whenever Israel is identifying something that might be dangerous to Israel, Israel is hitting again and again and again in Lebanon. And not only in the very close areas to the border, but also in faraway places. So I hope and pray that the same mechanism could be applied. And it was hinted here and there by Israeli officials that's going to be the technique that will be applied in Iran.
Interesting. Shai, you're still there. The Six-Day War has been an analogy and prism through which I think many of us have looked at this. I wrote about it. Others have and spoken. And surely it was many similarities in terms of the brevity, in terms of the preemptive strike, which was so successful. And I'm glad you mentioned the war of attrition. We have to remember, and I think this is another message that we Israelis need to take. Immediately after the Six-Day War, our victory was so sweeping militarily, territorially, that many people thought, oh, well, now, of course, the Arabs are going to make peace with us. And not only did that not happen, but in their Arab League summit a couple of months later, they came out with the declaration, three no's, no peace, no recognition, and no negotiations. If it was in that order, I don't recall. And I think we need to be mindful of the fact that those of us who are, for those who are still our enemies, they're still going to be our enemies. They've just been beaten.
They have been beaten, but you know, we have this term, the conceptia, which is a very, very, I would say, a term that rises many, many bad memories. For our English speakers, the conceptia is the way in Hebrew that we say the word conception. And so
I prefer to call it the misconception.
You're right, actually.
You're right. and the conceptia is, let's say, a set of thinkings that usually was cooked in the Israeli brains, and we love to picture reality the way that Israeli officials and generals created those misconceptions in before 1973. And also before the recent war in Gaza. And time after time after time, after each and every operation in Gaza, Israelis, generals, and prime ministers always warned the Gazans. If only, it started after 2006, after the unilateral withdrawal from Gaza. So the Israeli politician said, if one missile is going to be shot in Israel, the response will be very, very severe. And it never happened.
Yeah, right.
It never happened, unfortunately.
I know.
Again, I hope and pray that this time we'll continue to be very decisive and to be very, very protective for our security.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. in a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
Toby, before I introduce Shannon, who just joined us a few minutes ago, did you have any? I love your thoughts. Good ceasefire, bad ceasefire? You feeling safer these days?
I would say the overall consensus within Israel is it was an amazing feat. It was an amazing operation. We are proud of our soldiers. We're very happy and blessed that they're back. But in the back of my of the minds of the general, you know, general people in Israel is, you need to have the war in Gaza ended. You need to return the hostages, and you need to bring our men back from reserve duty. Without these three terms, it makes it very difficult to smile ear to ear and say this was a definite amazing ceasefire. Because if you say that Iran is the head of all these proxies, then you would imagine that a defeat, whether complete or partial, would include a defeat to its proxies. And a lot of people that I speak with, a lot of the young families, which have either one or both parts of the family, the mother or the father, in Miluim, have the same
in reserves,
have the same thoughts. It is not the same. It is not complete without our hostages back home. It is not complete without young men still in Gaza being killed daily. And it's not complete, you know, with the general situation as it is.
Okay, thank you for that. I want to ask panelists, if you wouldn't mind, please muting. We're getting some feedback from somebody. So I'm going to ask just to mute. Feel free to interject, but let's try and keep the, I don't know where it's coming from. And in the middle of the conversation, it's a little hard to diagnose and shut down. But Shanna, I would love, well, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
Shavua Tov. I introduced you in your absence, so I'm really glad you're here. Your perspectives, every one of us come from a unique perspective, but you are the one who was left homeless by this 12-day war. And you are living, I can see from the picture, because I saw your videos before, you're living in a hotel. And your perspective has to be unique and different. I want to ask you two things just quickly, and then we're going to pick up the conversation. How are you feeling going into Shabbat this week? Was it any different the previous weeks? And then how are you feeling in terms of this ceasefire?
So thank you for having me on. I am so, my life is so turned upside down, and thank you all for having me. I came in 15 minutes late. I'm so turned around in the last 2 weeks. Everything for me has been upside down. My home was completely decimated by a missile that touched down outside my window and really, really destroyed my whole building. I had to be rescued by emergency service officers that cut me out of the apartment and rescued me from inside the building. And my entire home and my gear and my camera equipment, pretty much everything is gone. I did recover some things, but it's just been 2 weeks of honestly physical labor. Like 3 or 4 days of this week from morning until night, I was with a team pulling stuff out of the rubble and recovering items and cleaning up my apartment so that I could figure out what was left in there. And so my life has just been upside down. I haven't been professionally able to keep up with my, you know, normally this would be my time to shine as a journalist. There's rockets flying overhead. There's deaths. There's a great story. And then in my life, I was actually just honestly struggling to survive and struggling to even meet the meal times at the hotel. Like I just ran upstairs. There's time windows for which you can eat. And so when you don't live in your own home, you start to really understand how grateful and how appreciative we all should be for being able to just reach into our fridge and grab food when we're hungry, when it's midnight and you want a little midnight snack. You know, you can't do that in a hotel. So things have just been off of my schedule for me for the last 2 weeks. Going into Shabbat this weekend was so different than going into Shabbat last weekend. Last weekend, I went into Shabbat so unnerved and worried about the rockets. And because my home was destroyed by a missile, you could imagine that my trauma of that is that it's going to happen again and again. And in fact, I had a lot of thoughts about where I could, I recovered some things. I recovered my laptop. I recovered a webcam that I'm speaking to you on. And I was trying to strategically put them in places that I thought would be shielded from another missile attack. And I had things at a friend and things at another friend. And I thought, OK, well, if I put half of my stuff here and half of my stuff here, when the next missile falls down on one of our homes, maybe I'll have some things here. And these are the types of thoughts of somebody who's just survived a really traumatic incident, but also these are very, very realistic and real thoughts. They're not just scared, nervous.
It's not theoretical. You know it.
It's not theoretical. There were so many hits of these ballistic missiles throughout the country. And I actually had read stories of people who had their homes hit twice during this war, not during the 12 days, but during a year and a half. And I feared that I was going to be a two-time victim. So these are real things that we're dealing with. And so going into Shabbat last weekend, I was nervous about my personal items that I had recovered and where they were going to be and where I was going to be. And this weekend I entered a lot, you know, and I like to track my thoughts. So my thoughts are, I'm a Sabbath observer. I should bring my phone and my wallet and my passport with me in my purse, even though it's Shabbat, because maybe if a missile comes down and I'm at a Shabbat dinner and I can't get into my hotel room. So these are the types of thoughts that I'm having, and they're real. And I will tell you, I did bring my purse with me to Shabbat dinner. Why did I do that? Because I'm in disbelief that this ceasefire is a real ceasefire. In disbelief that our enemies are going to stick to this ceasefire. And my fear was that Friday night, when Jews across Israel were finally putting their shoulders down and sitting at Shabbat dinner for the first time with a lesser degree of fear, that that was going to be exactly the moment that they were going to renew their strikes. So if you're asking about the ceasefire, I think, and Toby, something that I thought you were going to say as number one, and of course, all your points about the hostages coming home and Gaza and our army coming back are legitimate. But what I thought you were going to say is that it's not over until the Iranian regime is really 100% dismantled. And so my fear is that as long as the IRGC is still conducting operations in Iran, we're not safe.
Okay. So I want to put there. I want to put that on hold for just a moment. First of all, I welcomed you sincerely, but probably not effusively enough, because it really, for all the reasons that you just discussed, it's really, we're very grateful that you're here. You've gone through a lot, and I'm glad that we're having this conversation. There was a question before we go into IRGC or not, but I think it leads into that. A question, let's see, who posed it? Somebody just popped a question in about how you feel about the prime minister. We can go that direction. I don't know that it's so much necessary, but I would ask this. If each of you were prime minister, would you have agreed to the ceasefire after 12 days? Toby, you're kind of smiling. You're prime minister of Israel. Prime minister love. We could always use some more love.
Wow. I have not put myself in that position, to tell you the truth. I haven't. My mind has not taken up the leadership.
Well, I am.
The leadership you're taking up. Listen, Jonathan, we've been in survival mode for the last year and a half. many of us. Okay. The 12 days just exacerbated all our fears. Okay. It really took all the fears possible, especially as we got tints of back, was it in April when Iran made its first attack on Israel?
April of 24, last year, yeah.
Just before Passover. So right. That question, if I was prime minister, what would I honestly, really, being real right now, I'm not sure what I would have done because it's really complicated. It is so complicated. I think that a lot of things that we don't know, a lot of things that we're unaware of. I know for a fact that perhaps Israel meant to go a little bit longer, meant to take out some more missions. However, because of external reasons, wasn't even able to do that. I mean, even on the last day, when Iran didn't hold to the ceasefire and we immediately attacked and it caused this whole, you know, stir in the media with Trump and with Bibi and with the Iranian regime. It's very delicate. I believe that if I was prime minister, I would have a lot of sleepless nights. That's what I can tell you. More than I had as a mother of two in the where I was living. That's what I can tell you.
And by the way, to his credit, not getting politically, he didn't, from what I saw on TV and his public appearances, he ran this and managed it well in terms of energy and not appearing bleary-eyed. At least that was my observation. Julie, last time we had a female prime minister, she also spent most of her prime years in the United States. You're now Prime Minister Julie Stahl. Would you have agreed to the ceasefire, or would you have had words with President Trump?
I don't want to be prime minister.
I'm being theoretical. Come on, put yourself into a Barney book.
But let's just say, I think there's stuff going on that we don't know. And I think it's not over. And I don't know that he was forced to agree to a ceasefire, but I think it could be part of some overall plan. So I mean, you know, even when Trump was quote unquote negotiating with Iran for 60 days, and it seemed like, oh my gosh, he gave him a chance. He gave him a chance, and they said no. They said no. And so, you know, then we attacked, or Israel attacked, you know, and so I think that there's something more going on here. I also kind of wonder, because of the population and maybe the tiredness of the people, if it was a move for that. And now they're talking about, you know, this 2 weeks, and then we'll get the hostages back. So I think there's more going on than, or we'll finish in Gaza and get the hostages back. I think there's more going on than what we see. I don't think Netanyahu, I don't think he was like forced to agree.
Okay.
I would not have wanted to, but I think it's part of a bigger plan.
I don't necessarily disagree. Shai and Arnie, we've had lots of white male Ashkenazi men prime ministers. Let's pretend that you are. What would you do about this ceasefire?
Even some with good English.
A few. Not with your integrity, all Arnie.
No, that's the issue. To answer the question that was put in the comments, I think the country is ready for Israel. The country is ready for a regime change also.
Oh, okay.
And whether you like him or don't like him or anything else, I think the country is ready. But however, the polls say otherwise. The polls seem to be split yet again. If you saw any of the latest polls post-Iranian battle, They still come down fairly evenly, and the country is split in that case. And so, again, we don't know what's going on up 50 years from now. Hopefully, when the archives are revealed, a lot of this stuff will be have been written down, and not just in conversations on telephones that we don't know about. But hopefully, we'll be able to, you know. Maybe
let's bookmark this date, June 28th, 2075. We'll review, have you all back, right, and we will say what we learned from this.
Shauna, you for sure will be around. Toby, you know, not a problem. Shida, maybe. I don't know. I can't tell. Julie, hopefully. I won't be. I'm not going to be. But I think there's a, you know, yeah, we'll find out. Just as 50 years after the Yom Kippur War, we read of, you know, things that we didn't know about.
Absolutely. And, I hope that Israel gets a female prime minister. And I think that having a woman in that role could actually be really huge right now. I think it could be great. My mother always speaks about how women really understand what it means to create life, and that women are defenders of life. And that there would be more world peace if we had women at the negotiating tables. So I strongly advocate for more female involvement. I'm a journalist. I'm not a politician, but I am working to create within the community of internationals that I organize here in Tel Aviv. I'm trying to put forward the Olim community, which is the international community, into roles and get them introduced to the right people, because I think that there's a need in this country for more leadership and for new voices and younger people and diversity. And we know, and the statistics show, that when there are more women at the table, when there are more diverse voices and faces at the table, you actually have more excellence. So that's my wish for the country is to have.
Shauna, but I want to put you on the spot. Let's say that we had elections a year and a half ago.
Sure.
And you created a new immigrant party from mostly Tel Aviv, and you happen to be the head of the list, and you happen to get the most votes, or didn't even get the most votes, because we've seen that in our history before. You can get as few as 6 votes for the Knesset and still become the prime minister.
6 is enough.
6 is enough. What would you have done if you were prime minister this week? Would you have signed as you? Yes, there are many things in the background that we don't know about.
Right.
But what would you have done?
So I agree very much with Julie that there is probably a lot happening behind the scenes that we're not aware of, and that they're just like what we just saw play out with Trump, pretty much making some confusion before the American attack, and flip-flopping and information coming out about him dealing with the Iranians, and people saying, how could you speak with them? How could you try to make a deal with them? And then striking them. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. And even as a journalist, I recognize that. I actually feel, despite my home was directly impacted by the 12-day war, I actually think that Israel had the opportunity at this time to go after its largest enemy and its most imminent threat to our statehood. And I actually feel strongly that we don't always get those opportunities to do that. And I think that the international community will applaud us and be grateful for us in 10 years from now. But I do think that it would have been worthwhile to continue and carry out these operations until we felt that it was really, we completed the job. Now, that being said, I understand that all our pilots came home, that Israel was bracing for a mass casualty event of thousands and thousands of deaths, and we had less than 30. So that's miraculous. But and I don't want to change that. You know, I wish that no one more would die. I wish our hostages would come home. But I do think that we have a very rare opportunity to strike the enemy that I personally have been studying and reading about for a decade. And now it's here. So I actually feel like if you're going to make me say, I think that Israel should have continued to do what they needed to do until we could go to sleep at night, not being in fear, so that I don't have to carry my wallet, my passport, and my phone with me on Shabbat because I'm afraid that Iran is regrouping and going to strike again, to really make sure that that's not a possibility.
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, an incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com.
Right. And by the way, I meant to thank you. That was great. I want to take off on where with the direction you were just going. But for those who are following who aren't Jewish and don't understand the reference, what is the big deal? Why are we carrying a wallet and a purse and a cell phone on Shabbat? It's because as part of the day of rest, we don't conduct business. We're not online. We're unplugging. We're not doing commercial transactions and many other things. So seeing somebody carrying a purse and a phone on Shabbat in certain communities is glaring. Okay. Go ahead, Shai.
Not about the position of a prime minister, but I just
a good Jewish answer, a different answer. Yeah.
But I don't want us to forget even for a second that Israeli aircrafts were flying over the capital of Iran. They were cautious, obviously, but there weren't any major threat. And Baruch Hashem, all the pilots came back safely. Now, this is a very strong point in terms of the achievements that were achieved by the operation. Of course, that we wanted to get more, but as we say in Hebrew, I need your the help in translating this to our viewers. Adam yotze tamid kshechatzi ta'avato biyado. I mean, will you translate this, Jonathan? Are you familiar
Arnie,
with this term?
Arnie.
That every human being is living this planet by the end of his life when half of his desire is not fulfilled. So what I meant to say, was it well put? And anyway, the idea is that of course, we wanted to achieve more, and of course, we wanted to see the Iranian regime collapse. There were two major attempts by the Iranian people to topple the regime. That unfortunately, the American administration never helped those people. But now, Israel did a major service to the Iranians. But they have to rise
to the Iranian people. To the Iranian people. Oh yeah. I don't think the Ayatollah is worshiping facing Jerusalem now.
No, but I think that the Iranian people need to rise against the regime and finalize the what we all want to see, including okay. them and us.
Okay, so this is the direction I want to go. Shai, I'm going to ask you to mute as well, and I want to bring Arnie in. I think that we maybe narrowed down the audio issue, but there seems to be a consensus, and we've been going around it, but we're talking about not just complexity and things that we don't know, but layers of complexity. Shanna, I particularly like how you identified, we were expecting thousands of casualties, and there were fewer than 30, and thank God for that, except for the people who were killed and the people who were injured and the people who were homeless, but it could have been much worse, and yet if we were to persecute a war even more so, then there could or would be more casualties. And we know that war is horrible and bloody, and there are victims. So I feel like we're all kind of going in the same direction, and I invite any of you to contradict me or one another, but it seems like when we're talking about, do many or most of the Iranian people want freedom from the Islamic regime? Indeed, it seems that way. Do most Israelis, and a few of us have talked about that here today, regime change. Shanna, you said finishing the job, but you didn't say specifically what that is. Let's go. I mean, for me personally, I had done so many media interviews since October 7th, I've lost count. But I always said we needed to strike Iran in three ways. We needed to take out everything relating to IRGC and its leaders. We needed to take out everything relating to the nuclear program and its leaders. And by and large, we've done that really well. And we needed to take out the supreme leader himself. And that also goes to the Wizard of Oz analogy, that when the Wicked Witch dies, the people celebrate. They're free. Arnie, since I want to bring you in while everyone's muted, just to comment on that. Hopefully, you won't have any. But what are your thoughts? Should we? Will we be given yet another opportunity? Should we, if the ceasefire holds, if our hesitations that the Iranians might not uphold their ceasefire, or should we view, as some people have said, the firing of a single Iranian-supplied missile from Yemen be viewed as a legitimate reason to attack Iran again? Any comments on any of that?
Yeah, sorry if the sound, I had a problem earlier. Anyway, I believe that the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence agencies, have a way to get to him if they wanted to. I think we're good at that kind of thing. So if that is determined to happen, it will happen. It would be much better if the people of Iran somehow could rise up and take over. That would be from inside. That would be amazing. The problem is the IRGC is comprised of not thousands and not tens of thousands and not even hundreds of thousands, but something well over a million soldiers. And so it's hard to revolt against that many. But, I agree that that regime has to come down, and that would make us much safer.
I was going to ask you, and I'll pick this up as well. Much safer is nicer. Would it actually bring peace?
I don't think there'll ever be peace in the Middle East.
Okay. Anyone else?
I think we have a. I think things are changing rapidly. I mean, Arnie, I understand why you think that there won't be peace in the Middle East, because historically there hasn't been. But I actually think we're looking at a new Middle East. And I'll tell you from the context, my context, I'm a journalist from New York. And before I came to Israel, I was all about New York City politics. I could tell you lots of things about local New York City politics all day and about the state of New York. Before I left New York,
especially these days, that's another conversation.
It's fascinating what's going on now.
It's very fascinating, and I'm sure if I was still there, I'd be heavily involved in the Jewish vote and the anti-Semitism that we're seeing in New York City. But before I came to Israel, I was focused on the fact that there were dolphins swimming in the Atlantic Ocean in New York because New York Governor Cuomo made a clean up your waterways, and he was able to change things around in a place that had never had a sea life like that. So things can be changed with proper legislation. That being said, I came to Israel in 2018, and that's when the miracles started. The Abraham Accords, unreal. The future of the Middle East was changed forever. We had peace with countries that we never expected to see peace with. We are looking at a potential peace or normalization with Saudi Arabia, which we never could have dreamed of in a million years. And so I actually think that the miracles started in 2018 and they continued through 2020 with the Abraham Accords. And now we're seeing unfortunately, we're not seeing the gold and the glitter. We're seeing the bloodshed. But I do think that after this is over, we're going to have a very, very different Middle East. The Assad is out of Syria. The people of Lebanon, depending on who you talk to, would love to see the Christian population come back to Lebanon and there's a call from many Lebanese that I know to bring their citizens home who had fled the country. So I actually think that, and Jordan was shooting down missiles on behalf of Israel. When could we have ever expected our neighbors to be involved in in saving the state of Israel like this? It's unprecedented. So I actually think that there's a big chance that we could see peace. Maybe even in our lifetime, we could see a very different future.
Okay. Arne, you wanted to comment. Wait, but hold on. You have to unmute yourself on that.
Just for Jordan, it was also for their own good. There were missiles falling short of Israel into Jordan as well, but they were helpful. Not a problem. A lot of the Arab countries are helpful. I was simply saying that I think there are too many other entities in the Middle East that are just anti-Israel, and that's from my eyes. Julie, we had said you've been here 38 years. I'm here a little bit longer than that, and I've seen a lot of change among the opinion of many of our enemies, some for very good and others for worse. The extremists are more extreme.
So let me bring it back to where I was going. Regime change. Well, yeah, it'd be easier and nicer, assuming that the Iranians did it, even if they came up against a million IRGC, those who haven't been killed and may not defect for their own protection. But if we haven't finished the job, if we're still nervous, albeit with Shanna's hopeful look that we're seeing a new Middle East evolve, I would contend this: as long as there's an Islamic regime in Iran, that's the head of the octopus is still alive and it will not suddenly see the light. But I love any comments. Shai, Toby, Julie, is there a job to be finished? Should we have finished the job? Will we yet be given the opportunity to finish the job? Or are we good? Or are we good? We're in a good place and we're all going to leave here and hug.
We are not yet in the best position, okay? But we're in a much better position now in comparison to October 7th, of course, okay? So the head of the octopus is still barely alive because it was struck severely. But have a look what happened to the proxies. Okay, so the Houthis shot this missile this morning, okay? But they haven't done anything similar to this for a few weeks, if I remember correctly. Hezbollah was beaten very, very severely, and the Israeli achievements are great, are enormous. Again, it's not the full picture that all of us wanted to see or to have. And God willing, we'll be able to finish the job.
But Which job?
To make sure that no potential threat can be directed to the state of Israel and its citizens.
Arnie's mentioning we still have Hamas.
Yeah, they're not, they haven't gone anywhere.
Of course.
They're recruiting more people today to join Hamas than ever before.
And I would contend this, that as long as there's a, whether it's Iran or Qatar or Turkey or someone else who wants to step up and find people and create entities, even if Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis are all eliminated somehow, if there are people with oil money or whatever money that they have, they'll find enemies to rise against us. Okay, regime change. Toby, Julie, yes, or is that the goal? Should it have been the goal?
Well, I think that's the bottom line. I mean, we're not going to see, they're already, you know, whatever damage was done or wasn't done or whatever, they're already going blah, 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 you know, and I don't think they changed their death to America, death to Israel chant. And they're, you know, arresting people that are against them. So until there's a change, I don't think we're going to see peace in the Middle East. I think there's also this kind of, you know, the whole issue of, quote unquote, the Palestinian people, and this is their land and everything. And it's like, it's all built on lies. And until that's dealt with, too, then, you know, people can keep funding, fueling that also. It's, you know, they've raised generation after generation to believe that this is their land and, you know, the Jews stole it and everything. And it's simply not true. And, you know, I mean, historically, it's not true. And I think as long as there's, I don't know that it's Israel's responsibility to affect regime change inside Iran. I think we gave it a boost. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know how that's accomplished, but it definitely needs to happen. And not just a new Khomeini, you know, like there needs to be a flip in their thinking about who Israel is and that, hey, we do belong here. We actually have good history together. Actually, it was your ruler who sent us back here and helped us come back and rebuild. You know, I mean, so I think there's...
For those who aren't getting the reference, you were speaking of King Cyrus a little while ago. Okay.
Yeah, right. It was a while ago. All right. But still, that's the history. That's the history. And the last 46 years, I mean, even before that, Israel and Iran were having, you know, they were going to have diplomatic ties before the Shah or before the Ayatollahs came in. And I think that, you know, there has to be some kind of a change of heart that people get it, that Israel belongs here, that we have history here, that there's a lot of things like, I mean, I've said it for years that, you know, the Arab world and Iran too was, you is used the issue of the Palestinians as a battering ram against Israel. And it's not, you know, it's all lies.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance to create an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anybody for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
I'm going to keep coming back to what Shama said. We can be hopeful and see where it goes. Toby.
I think we should be hopeful, but I think we have to also be wise.
Good.
Two very short comments about that. One is the timing in which this opportunity we were given happened. This is after almost a year and a half of exhaustion and weariness and yeush, desperation, if you can call it like that, of the people, of the nation. You know, this is the longest that we've been in a war. Okay. It's having its effect. In the end, the nation is me, you, Shai, Arnie, Shana, Julie. It's everyday people who want to go back to everyday life, and it takes its toll. So given the circumstances and given everything that has happened since October 7th, I would say that, yes, of course, the ideal, and we live in a life that is based on reality versus ideal every day. The ideal thing would be, of course, the regime change in order to reduce whatever threats, high up as they may be, on the nation of Israel. The realistic situation is you cannot necessarily get everything that you want, especially after such a time frame. You know, if this would have happened in the beginning of October 7th, if that was the opening attack, I can guarantee you that it wouldn't be a much different picture, right? And second, life is fluid. Life is fluid in the sense that up until 1979, we were in a different situation. Up until a year ago, Syria was in a different situation. Life is fluid. We don't know what tomorrow brings. Most of the believers, which I'm sure they are here participating and watching, are very cautious of what this means in terms of end time and revelations and the fact that it's pulling us towards end time revelations and all of that. And so they see it as part of, you know, this bigger picture. Will there be peace in the Middle East? I don't know. I know for certain that within Israel, the precautions will only grow. Okay, the reason why we are here today is because we realized from previous wars that we cannot maintain being idle. We cannot be, what's the word here? You know,
proactive.
We need to be proactive. And that's, in my opinion, that's the thing that's going to change and possibly accelerate within the next few years. Do not forget, we have an army, which is the Israel Defense Force. Okay, it's not Israel Attack. It's the Israel Defense Force, which means that most of the things that we have in our ammunition are things that are going to protect us regardless of whatever threat there is out there. And that's what it's going to change. It's just going to get better, hopefully, and think up of new threats that may possibly come. You don't know what's happening in the mind of your enemy. You don't know what he's thinking. I mean, the latest one now is that the Iranians are able to infiltrate a new type of a threat, which is personal individuals, okay, who they're able to recruit that easy, which can be so damaging to the state of Israel. So we're just going to get better at what it is that we know how to do. And as for regimes, extremists, fanatics, they're going to remain the same.
I actually wanted to note on that. We have had anti-Semitism for as long as we can remember. It's always going to be there. It's hard to explain why, but we have seen time and again that we succeed through strength and through power as a nation. And our peace with Egypt came after a war with Egypt. So I'm actually very hopeful that we will see more peace in the Middle East because we will be respected by our neighbors for our military operations. And Toby, you spoke about being beaten down a lot. I actually think that the reason Iran was targeting us in the middle of the night was so that we'd all be exhausted and so that the entire nation would be at our weakest. And so that's another point of being strong. So I think that what you're talking about, Julie, you mentioned the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and you said as long as that exists and as long as that mentality that we stole the land exists, we're not going to be able to move forward. I disagree. I think that the story, there's always in every century, and Hillel Neuer, the executive director of UN Watch, speaks about this a lot. He talks a lot about how whatever issue society is dealing with at that time, they will take the Jewish people as the oppressor. So currently, the world is concerned with the oppressed and the oppressor and colonialism. This is a hot topic because just within the last 100 years, I mean, look at history, within the last 100 to 200 years, a lot of countries were decolonized, okay? Starting with Haiti in 1804, was the first nation, by the way, to decolonize itself through its through guerrilla warfare. So what our current moment is trying to do is make the Jews the oppressor. And there that will carry. That will be in every generation, that whatever the story is, the Jews will be the scapegoat of that. And so now is our time to continue through strength. And it comes at the level of which the people are here, that we all should be strong and that our leadership should continue strong as well.
Thanks, Shauna. You know, if we're looking at history over the extended period, you are certainly that's correct. If we're looking at it only in the last century, I think the source is pretty much all still the same in terms of extremist Islam, the Muslim Brotherhood and its incarnations. But all very hopeful. Listen, I would like to do one final round.
I
also has a question before my final round or a point. And Julie.
Okay. I want to share with our viewers and listeners a very moving experience that my wife and I participated yesterday on Friday midday. This was a very special wedding of the youngest son of good friends of ours. We remember him as a young boy, but he is now a major in the Israeli Air Force, and he fly the F-16. And the wedding was set to yesterday, months ago, and then the war broke, so obviously the wedding was canceled. And then on Tuesday, sometimes once he came back from Tehran or wherever, he said to his mother, okay, we're going to have the wedding. He said this on Wednesday. Okay, the wedding is gonna happen. And he did. And guys, this was such a moving event. It's unbelievable. You know, people were standing and they gave small Israeli flags to each and every guest, and we all cheered and waved with the flags. It was such an uplifting event for everybody, yeah. And of course for his fellow pilots, that all of them came in order to participate, sure, in this wedding. It was really a very, very moving, and I want to take this experience as a sign for the Jewish perseverance, as a sign for the Jewish continued perseverance along the course of history. In my book, I relate to the Jewish history as a huge roller coaster. We go from the down, we go up, and then we go down and up. And Bezrat Hashem, God willing, we are about to open a brand new chapter. And the Abraham Accord is really the beginning of this new chapter. And everybody is waiting for the next countries to join, to jump on the wagon. So I'm sure
it's... In a moment, I'm going to pose my last thought on that, my last question to all of you. Julie, you had a comment, and then I want to...
Wanted to say that I'm not saying we can't move forward, because we are. We move forward all the time. I'm just not sure we're going to move forward into peace unless the kind of the roots of this whole thing are dealt with. I mean, I think the ones that
And what are the roots, Julie? Just let's be clear. What are the roots?
That you know, Israel has a right to be here, that we're recognized as a state, that we didn't steal the land from anyone, and you know, that we have a right to be here.
Okay, got it. Thank you, Arnie. Yeah, I love how I'm trying to do a last round and you're all interjecting. Go.
No, this is my last round. This is it. I'll use the same two words that I used after the Oslo Accords and the Camp David Accords and all the other accords that we've signed, whether with Egypt and Jordan and Arafat and whatever. Cautious optimism. Okay. Those are my two words.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you all yet a last opportunity. And my general question is, in 1 minute, focused on the topic today, right now, in terms of the ceasefire, look, what did we do right? What did we not do enough of? What are you looking for? Go in that direction. I'm going to give that, but I want to start, Toby, I'm going to ask you something to start off that round, but also something direct and a little more personal. We spent a lot of time the last 2 weeks with my family here because we all have the bomb shelter in the house. So most of my kids have come home today. It was all my kids and their spouses and the grandchildren for Shabbat, which was a blessing. And a lot of time talking about how, despite all of the trauma, the difficulty, the stress, not just the last 2 weeks, but the last 21 months, we're still living through a remarkable historic time for the Jewish people and the nation of Israel. Toby, you're the only one here who has little kids. How do you interpret that to your children? Which is a specific question to you, and then any other question or answers that you want to give.
That's a very loaded question. I will do my best to answer. In fact, I do have very little kids, like you said. I also have a husband who spent over 300 days, it is, and who's counting anyway in the last year and a half, which means the burden of the household and the home and running the children, you know, falls on the head of the wife, in this case on my head. I'm also in my 39th week of
pregnancy right now. Wow, that's exciting.
Which is a bracha because you bring new life. And I love what Shanna said in the beginning, women are bringers of life, right? So a lot. The way that I interpret everything, and I really like how Shai began with speaking about Israeli perseverance, I call it resilience. The way that I interpret that is through my actions and not necessarily through my words to my kids. Because at this age, how much can you possibly explain to them? There's only so much that you can explain about the reason why Dada is not at home, or reason why he comes home with a rifle, and he comes home, you know, dressed in the, and he can't speak to us during the day. There's so much that you cannot explain to this younger generation. But what you do have control of is how you brace yourself and how you are resilient and how your emotional state is, regardless of whatever the challenge is. And I think this is something that is extremely unique to the Jewish people, to the Israeli people, and it is interpreted in everyday life, where you have a strong sense of community, you have a strong sense of one for the other. I remember what happened the days following October 7th. You had people gear up and volunteer and, you know, cook for soldiers and get their clothing. I mean, one kind of nation that was recently attacked under fire decides, okay, I'm not going to think just for myself. I'm going to think for others. Okay. And this is part of the DNA of the Israeli resilience. And in this time frame to which I was interpreting, or you can say translating everything that was happening to my kids, and building within them the resilience, I also wrote a book about this. And the book was intended with two audiences in mind. One was the Israeli woman, the wife of, the wives of, reminding them to shift from a survival mode, regardless of whatever challenge that we are in here, reminding them who they are as lionesses, as resilient women, as the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, but also to people who live outside of Israel, who to some degree want to tap into what is this resilient animal, this resilient, you know, being, this Israeli, that no matter how much, I mean, listen, we had a 12-day war. 2 days after, go to the beaches of Tel Aviv, people are partying, people are getting married, life goes on, and you would not see this anywhere else in the war, in the world, where war has just war. Yes, 12-day war, whatever degree has just taken place. You will not. And you'll not see that at the stage that people are seeing, not that they're under some kind of influence. They're seeing and they're going out and they're continuing with life, because life to us is sacred. And so when I wrote that book, and I'll be happy to share it here, it's called Braving the Storm.
What's the title? Let everyone know so they can look for it.
It's called Braving the Storm, and you can find it on Amazon Kindle. It was taking literally pieces of the last year and a half situations and interpreting them as to how the Israeli resilience is reflected in those moments.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire, and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds, just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones.
So yeah, that's regarding that. And regarding the ceasefire, if that's, am I correct? If it was the right thing or not the right thing at the moment, there is no exchange for peace. The way that Shana opened that sentence of saying just to go to the fridge in the night and get a snack, you know, sometimes we take things for granted. I think for every day that we have peace within our nation, that for us, we should be very grateful for it, extremely grateful for it. In the longer term, I know that we have a lot of work to do. But we are a blessed nation, divinely protected by God's hand. And we continue praying for peace, honestly.
Man, and nothing is more hopeful than giving your children another sibling at this time. So we will look forward to hearing good news from you. Who else would like to thank you, Toby? Thank you. And really seriously, that's very exciting for you and for all of us. Who else would like to do last minute comment? Shai?
As a tour guide here in Israel, I always try to get the people connected to the roots here, but also to see how Israel is really a one of a kind place. So just to continue what Toby started to say, you know, when the war in Ukraine started, millions of people from Ukraine ran away from Ukraine. When the war in Israel started, more than 100,000 Israelis were anxious to come back to Israel. So that's one major difference. And I would like to conclude with really with a general call to the listeners and to the viewers to simply come over and see the land of Israel and see the people of Israel with your own eyes. Because unfortunately, because of maybe anti-Israeli sentiments, anti-Semitic sentiments, the view that is being transmitted all over the world of Israel is in too many cases is totally wrong, and there is nothing better than coming over here and seeing the reality with your own eyes. And until you do that, keep on reading the Bible. Keep on reading in Psalms 122. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, because we as people of faith, we believe that the fact that we and you are praying for the peace of Jerusalem, ultimately all the prayers are coming to heaven and creating this magical shield that is keeping Israel alive. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Shanna, please.
Yes, yeah, so I agree, Shai. It is so meaningful to come to the land of Israel. And I just had, these are my closing remarks. I just had a troubling phone call with a Catholic American friend of mine, Italian American friend of mine yesterday, right before Shabbat. I've known her for about 12 years at this point. She grew up in Westchester, New York. So she was growing up around Jews. And then we became the closest of friends in university, and her Jewish camaraderie, I could say, grew even more. And she recently got married and has been experiencing some anti-Semitic tropes from her new husband that she had not really looked into or understood before. And they ended up getting into an argument about my being here and why am I here and why haven't I returned to the United States, and him having questions about what I stand for and about being an Israeli. And I encouraged her to ask him if he would have the same stance about a Russian American in the United States. Would he feel that a Russian that was in the United States that he was meeting is the Antichrist, is so bad to demonize me the way that he is demonizing me just for living here and just for being a proud Jew and talking about the news in Israel, is already an affront to this person? Because I never spew words of hate. I'm a journalist. And I give the facts and I share the story of Israel. And just that alone is enough to incite a lot of anti-Semites around the world. And so she commented to me, you know, Shanna, I think something that has made me indignant in defending you is that week that I came to visit you in 2019. And she visited me in 2019, and she was so warmly welcomed by the people of Israel. And she got to see all the different colors of the people of Israel, too, which so many Western people don't understand, that Israelis are not, you know, they have, if you're in the United States and the only Jewish person that you've ever met is someone who looks European, like myself, that's your only reference point. And so I think for her, it was an eye-opening experience. And she's Sicilian, so she's actually quite dark. And so for her, I think the experience of seeing people that looked like her and seeing people from across the board was really eye-opening. And Toby, I want to go toward where you were talking about the people of Israel coming back a day or 2 days after war. I live in Tel Aviv. I just came in from seeing so many people in Tel Aviv that perhaps were here for the weekends that haven't been able to come to Tel Aviv in a few weekends and are spending the day by the shore. But there's actually something that I want to bring up here that is something I'd like to see for the state of Israel in the future. And this is regarding the ceasefire that you asked about, Jonathan, for us to close on a comment about the ceasefire. I think the ceasefire was very abrupt. And I don't think that there was a proper state of the nation address from our officials. I think that one thing that our country is lacking is communication and empathy and a social component. And that's because we're in survival mode. Our nation hasn't even hit 100 years old yet. Perhaps we don't have time for waiting in lines. Perhaps we don't have time for using extra words like excuse me, please, and thank you, which is a comment that people make about the Israeli people. And
Don't frighten the people, Shana. Don't frighten them.
Don't fight. I attribute.
Don't
frighten the people. I attribute any criticism of the tough Israeli to the fact that we've been in survival mode our entire existence, and we haven't graduated to a state that other countries that have more weight and more history behind them has been afforded to have.
And have been at war for every day of our existence. It's not,
and we've been at war.
Yeah.
And so one thing that I wish for us, and we can each do this for our own communities. It's something I try to do for the international community, is we can address our communities with words of with soulful words. And I think that it's been very shocking for everyone to go from 12 intense days of being in and out of the bomb shelter all day to then being released into the wild, expected to get back to work, expected to get back to school. For me, I feel like I've already been forgotten. My house was blown up in these 12 days, and now I'm expected to jump back on the bandwagon, find myself a place to live, jump back into work. Whereas at least, you know, One thing that President Biden, former President Biden, is actually known for, and I'm reading a book about him right now, is his empathy. And I've never heard anyone talk about a leader for his empathy. And people in the United States voted President Biden into his role because he went around to all the communities and he talked with individuals about his personal trauma and his pain. I don't know if you know this, but he lost two.
Donna, yeah, sure. But let's avoid President Biden's bio here as we're trying to
but
wrap up on
the ceasefire. But the point is that he gave Israelis a hug when they came to the United States, and he has in his office. And I think that the people of Israel need a hug. I think we need a break. I think we can't be expected to jump back into work. And I think, you know, if you're asking me as a civilian my view on the ceasefire, it was very abrupt and there was no transition. And there needs to be some words to the Israeli public. And I call on all the leaders in this chat to return to their communities and do so.
Correct observations. Thank you. Arnie, Julie, you said you made your last comments, but I'm still giving you an opportunity if you want. No, Julie, any last comment regarding our topic?
You know, I think it happened. And I agree with Shana. It was very abrupt. I think we have to also look and see, like, and not downplaying anything. 15,000 people homeless. Shana lost her home. 28 people were killed. But, like, it could have been horrendous and more horrendous. Let's say it that way. And we could have had thousands dead. We could have had things decimated. And I really believe it was God himself. And because he's ordained for us to be here. Right. And, you know, people are going to fight against it. It's the other side. But he wins in the end.
That's right. And as a result, we do. You know, people have been asking me, I lost track of how many interviews I've done, but a lot. And people have asked me, how am I? And I say, we're blessed, but stressed. And those are both true. And we've seen tremendous miracles in all of this. To all of the panelists, first of all, I owe you two things. Tremendous gratitude for coming on today and sharing as you have, and an apology. As I said at the outset, this is the biggest panel I've done. And therefore, we could go on in many directions of this conversation for a lot longer. And I know that there are many things that each of you could have continued to contribute. But this has been insightful for those following live, for those watching or listening afterward. Ultimately, we're a nation of 10 million quite diverse people. And I think more than ever in the last 21 months, in the last 2 weeks, we've experienced a national traumas and national coming together, and God willing, from the optimistic perspective, a sense of moving forward, if not peace. And that will be a debate and conversation that we go forward. Thank you all for joining. And as I wrap up, as we always do with the inspiration from Zion, the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation wants to offer you a special opportunity just for following. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. I think I've been doing this now for three years, because the podcast is 4 years old and the webinar is 5 years old. All we ask that you do is like, comment, or share the link to this program, the link to this broadcast, however you're listening to it. And once a month, I pick someone new to receive a volume from Jonathan's Bookshelf. And now since August of 23, just before the war, maybe it was September, we've been offering Not to Be Outdone by Toby and Shai, who each have their own books, and others who have published quite significantly as well. We published our magnificent book in September of 23, just before the war began in Gaza, called Israel the Miracle. And we've been giving that out. It's a stunning Toby, I showed you the proof of it. Wow, that was a long time ago. Anyway, it's a stunning collection of essays by 75 Christian leaders from all over the world writing about why Israel is significant to them. And it's a coffee table book, retail value of $75. So all we ask is that you do is comment, like, or share this, and someone gets to go home with one. We're always grateful to our sponsors. First, the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia, who have always been so generous. And I always tell people, if you're ever in the area, please pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And special thanks to the Coyne family as well for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and building bridges. This episode, it's actually very personal. I'm honored and sad at the same time that this is in memory of my good friend, former advisory board member Carol Millett. Thanks to her sister Marcy, Carol was a dear friend for a lot of years, and she passed away just after her birthday this year. Our birthdays were a day apart, and we were always able to stay in touch then. Carol loved and cared deeply and personally for the state and people of Israel. If she were here today, I know she would be raising a lot of important questions and frustrated for all of us, the suffering that we've had to go through. And it's special to have this conversation specifically in her memory. If you'd like to sponsor an episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. As always, we love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue, and invite you especially to send questions about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here where we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you. Hallelujah.